Hello, and welcome to the very first podcast from SCC English, the English department of St. Columba's College in Dublin, in Ireland. You can learn more about us at our blog, sccenglish.ie. My name is Julian Gerdam, I'm the head of the department, and we hope over the next few weeks, months, years even, to put together a series of podcasts on matters literary and language and poetry and short stories and fiction and books and so on. But I'm starting with our very first podcast with an interview with a colleague and friend, Ronan Swift, who's sitting in front of me in the studio here. And the reason I'm talking to him is that he's just released his very first album of songs. And so we're going to be talking about words and music and the creative process, probably, and many other things over the course of the next few minutes. So, Ronan, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start off and by telling us the title of your very first album.
The title is Farewell, Future Wives. And I don't know whether people would pronounce it my way. There's no indications as to how to pronounce it, but yeah.
I noticed that one of the tracks is Farewell, Future Wife, which seems to have kind of pluralized itself into the title. How did that happen?
One of my musical friends that I used to hang around with christened a girl I fancied at the time, your future wife, and it sort of stuck as the title of that song, and then more of them seemed to appear,
right.
So we got pluralized.
It's kind of slightly bleak title, isn't it?
I like that there's something nice in the tension there. Yes, she's saying goodbye to someone who's supposed to be there in the future, but yeah, I wonder, is it a bit downbeat?
Well, it's memorable. I think that's important. It's memorable. Yeah. Let's talk about how you start to write, where a song comes from. What is the kind of seed of a typical Swift song?
Yeah, that's a good one. It comes from some sort of preoccupation at the time. A desire to maybe get something that one's been thinking about or feeling into a tune. And quite often that'll start by a simple phrase, a lyrical phrase of a few words, and then matched and married with some chord progression that I might be strumming in silence. So that's how I do it. I mean, every song's different as well. I've got a song, for instance, it's not on this record, but just this summer I was out in County Mayo, and there was a man staying in the house where I was staying. Looked across the bay at Croagh-Patrick, and he said, in the morning, he said, clouds on the reek. And for some reason, that phrase I liked and stuck with me, and that's the title of it, the first lines of a newish song.
Sounds good. Yes. Yeah. How long does a song normally kind of gestate with you? Is it relatively quick, or kind of take months, or even come back in a year or two?
They're usually torturously slow. Yeah, they tend to be perhaps started and left as fragments, and then only when needed, and the rest of my songs seem a bit stale, I might dust them off. I need time and sort of maybe even away from the guitar and my normal routines to actually sort of painfully flesh out the words.
Does anyone else see them, or do they change in the rehearsal or even in the recording process?
The interaction with other musicians from time to time throws sort of little question marks, and I'm quite open to changing things. I mean, I'm not even, strangely enough, although particular in my own lyrics, a great lyric listener. I've always been more attracted to melodies in my own music listening. And I mean, for Bob Dylan, people love him for his lyrics, but I sort of passed me by on that front a bit. So that's an example of how I'm a bit more of a music man, but in my own stuff, I do pore over the lyrics a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the words are, it's obvious, you're a very good singer, guitarist, you know? But it's very obvious that from the album, there's a whole kind of fascination with words and play and sometimes very quick rhymes and echoes of words and so on. And they're what I call nifty lyrics.
Well, Thanks very much. I do love words at the best of times and in everyday life and conversation. I suppose I'm trying to get that kind of fun and enjoyment across. And I hope they don't get in the way. I think sometimes perhaps I throw in too many words, but that's something to look forward to.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I should say for our listeners, that the album, Farewell Future Wives, is of course available on sale, and all you have to do is email us at scc.english@yahoo.ie and a transaction can be made. If you're going to order them from Fiji, there might be some postage cost, but let's deal. So I recommend it. It looks terrific. Cover by Conrad Frankel, Old Columbum, and great production values, gorgeously produced, I think. Could you tell us a little bit about the musicians you were working with and the production process itself?
Yeah, the guys that recorded with it are people that I've kind of known for years or through other people. A lot of them, as it happens, were in school, either ahead of me or slightly younger. There's Owen O'Brien and Dara O'Brien, two brothers and friends that have contributed guitars to the record. Malachi Robinson, another fella from school who's a bass player. He plays bass in the Irish Chamber Orchestra. He's classically trained, but he can do anything. And there's Josh Johnston, who's a piano player. And Bill Blackmore. I always think those two sound like New Orleans jazz players. Josh Johnston and Bill Blackmore.
Only alliterative backing musicians.
Exactly. They're also, Bill's the trumpet player. And they're the core of the group. Giles Packham produced it with me and engineered and mixed it. And it was his studio, Waveform Studios, in the city centre that we recorded, as well as actually recording it in St. Columbus College Chapel.
That was a very good job, because it sounds terrific. Thanks. I'd like to move on a little bit just to talk about the kind of mixture in the album, because it's a very... Well, it's a slightly quirky kind of album. It opens with an email from Romeo to Juliet, thus connection with our own jobs as English teachers. And later on, there are other kinds of things in it. There's a story, spoken story by an older man. There's a catch by the composer Henry Purcell and so on. It's quite a mixture of things. It's quite a medley of things. What did you want the kind of mixture to sound like for the album as a whole?
I always like albums, if I listen to them myself, to have something, while it kind of unifies them also, to make them a bit more textured. And so I felt that that was one of my aims. So I've got some spoken word, as you say, and I've got strange sounding choral pieces, and yeah, I think it just adds interest and it takes away from sort of straightness that can become a little bit samey.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about the opening track, because this is the email from Romeo and Juliet. What prompted that?
Well, that was just an inspiration that I got from writing an email to a girl called Juliet, who ended up, we ended up just improvising piano behind it. And Giles Packham, not Josh Johnston, played the piano in the college chapel. And he just said, I thought I'd do something Arvo Partish. And I said, well, is that what that was? So we just really made it up on the spot.
It's a very atmospheric beginning to the album.
It was a risk, I think, to put it there. It certainly wasn't the first song on the track on the album initially. And we just rejigged a few things maybe a year ago and said, well, wouldn't it literally, not quite threw them up in the air and let them land, but I thought maybe if we wanted to make it sound something different, put a slightly different sounding track at the very outset.
It does, yeah. I should have added to our listener, by the way, that this album comes at a snip at mere €15, and it's one of the bargains of the year. So I recommend it. Multiple copies, perhaps. I'd like to talk to you about your influences what musicians you particularly listen to that you think have influenced your own music making.
Yeah. I've always loved Irish music. I do come from fairly folky background, but I love, in our family, sort of, we always listen to old soul music as well, and American black music in the 50s and 60s, James Brown and the funk and, but as well as that, American sort of music like Neil Young and the Band. And, I was very influenced at one stage by John Martin, who's an English Scottish songwriter who died about a month ago.
He died recently, yes, in Kilkenny. I thought you lived in Kilkenny.
Yes, he'd moved over to Ireland, yeah. His music was fantastic from the early 70s, real strong stuff. So that was sad. I'm listening to a couple of people, Andrew Bird and a band called Beirut at the moment. And they're very quirky, but good. Oh, Arctic Monkeys as well. They're a little bit more pace.
Quite a lot of, it's quite an array of influences and quite an array in the album. I have a new tagline for you, for your brand, which is not so much a Swift, as a magpie. Less a Swift than a magpie, something like that.
Yeah. We can work that.
We'll have a go at it. Now, I would be lynched by your fans all around the world if I didn't ask you about the signature tune, the one which, you know, so many people know now, which is called Adulterous Thoughts. And give me the setup of that, what prompted that particular song?
That, I think, was partially, even though it's a song I wrote a long time ago, was that phenomenon that you realize you're slightly getting older. You know, they say when the Gardaí are looking the same age as you were younger, and then when mothers bringing their kids to school are looking more or less the same age as you too. So that was me cycling. It does slightly feel like another person, and it is a fictitious song, but that's the setting of it, and me cycling to work here in school as well, although another job.
Yeah, of course, we should say that you've had quite a lot of careers. You are a musician and a pedagogue now, but once upon a time a horticulturalist, working in the gardens, which must have given you plenty of time to mull over songs and thoughts about creation and so on.
Yeah, I think so. And I think although there's not too much nature in this particular collection, the next one, I think, will have more kind of pastoral feel, I hope.
There you preempted my next question, which was, farewell future wives, not farewell future albums. Surely there is one more to come, and you've just revealed that there is one in the pipeline.
Cat's out of the bag. Yeah, no, I'm actually working on I've already started work on another one, the second studio album of songs, old and new. And in the last half term there, I began doing some guide tracks for that to give to other musicians and to throw in their contributions. So that's up and running, yeah, that's exciting.
And when do you think you'll complete that process? How long do we have to wait? Not 10 more years, we hope.
This will be quicker. I think we'll be looking at a faster turnaround, perhaps. I'd say we can't avoid being finished with the big summer holidays coming ahead. So I'm looking at the autumn.
Grab the Christmas market.
Yeah, roll up.
Stocking filler.
Album one and two.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. Excellent.
And another question, which I know I wouldn't be forgiven if I didn't ask, which is that you have become known as the man behind the spoon, because some of your publicity photographs basically have you hiding behind a wooden spoon. And indeed, if you look at our blog, sccenglish.ie, you may well see a picture of the man himself behind a spoon. So there must be some deep metaphorical, profound, perhaps philosophical truth behind this. So what exactly is it?
Well, that I think every artist reserves the right to not answer certain questions. No. The spoon photo shoot how can we match it again? I do not know. I think I was in a desperate hurry to get into St. Stephen's Green to the guys in the studio for artwork, photos. I literally thought, well, I'm not going to go in empty-handed and stand in my jeans and pullover. So I grabbed some stuff from the kitchen. And I remember that thing as kids. Of some people had were able to balance a dessert spoon on their nose. But this is a huge, big African wooden spoon.
It's a big boy, yeah. It's
enough to sort of obscure my most of the center of my face.
An inspiration, actually. I mean, the idea, not so much the look.
Yeah. It's funny. I know there's more in the archive. I can't find them though. I think we'll have to think of something fresh for album number two. Yeah.
Now I have a question here, kind of cheesy question. What's your favorite track? In other words, which of these tracks are you kind of very proud of particularly? Which would you choose? What's your Desert Island track?
Of all the tracks on that record, I suppose it would have to be... the big, huge medley from My Millennium Sweetheart, which is the one I think I'll probably be remembered for if people get that far down and listen into the record. So that's the one I printed the lyrics of it alone in the remaining space of the little booklet. Because I just thought, for that reason, I suppose, that I thought it was the...
It's a big, ambitious song, isn't it? I mean, it's over 10 minutes. And in fact, I think it's not just really a song as such. It's a mixture, kind of rolling mixture of things about the night of the millennium, as they say.
Yeah, it is a medley, but I think it hangs together. And I've tried to repeat certain musical themes, particularly towards the end, to tie it all together. But it's a crunchy kind of a collection of snapshots, yeah, of that strange night that we kind of, once it was over and done with, was more or less forgotten. But in the run into it, in the lead up, my goodness, for a new millennium, we heard that once. But it was a good night, actually. That's why I think I thought I'd make a note of it. I had a great time. I think others probably got a damp squib.
And just while we're on it, the track afterwards is called The Simpleton. And I think at one point you were considering you're branding yourself as not the man behind the spoon, but as The Simpleton. Yeah. Could you explain that one?
Well, The Simpleton is another song which I really like, and it's probably the other sort of studio-y song that is such a contrast because it's short. I like that song very much with the trumpet coming in at the end. It was going to be the very last song of the track on the album, but it's a song about simplicity, I think, and about us being some sort of conduit for life. And I don't know what else.
Well, for our listener, there's going to be a treat in a second because you've been listening to us talking, but now you're going to get a chance to hear a track from the album. Just before that, a reminder that this is the very first podcast from SCC English, the English department of St. Columba's College in Dublin in Ireland. And you can look at our blog on sccenglish.ie. You can find the email address there too, that I mentioned earlier, if you want to buy Farewell Future Wives. And I'm going to finish my conversation with Ronan, first of all, by thanking him for being the first guinea pig in the studio. Thank you very much, Ronan.
It's been a pleasure.
And secondly, by allowing him to introduce the end of the podcast, which is track 3 on the album, Farewell Future Wives, and then we'll play it for you. So this is a song called Dancing. Ronan, please tell us about Dancing.
Well, this is a song which tries to celebrate... I suppose human love and relationships and how a lifelong partner can raise us above the everyday. And I try to tie that in picturing a sort of a dedicated couple dancing and how that brings them in touch with both their humanity and and beyond.
Dancing is fine when you're standing in line, and you're facing your life's one desire. She's looking so good, she's so much in your blood, she's been setting your heartstrings on fire. The people you greet are the people whose feet'll be moving past yours on the floor. The old scent of the hall helps you recall why you keep on returning for more. We're the compassionate ones, we won't question the crosses you bear. We're not immaculate ones, but we've open hearts ready to share. Ready to share. Tired of the life that you lead. But come the week's end, and you're with your best friend, and she's finding the strength that you need. As you move around and your heart starts to pound, you begin to feel human once more. Your shoes on the ground with the slightest of sound, slide aside over the floor. Passionate ones, but we've crosses to bear of our own. We're not immaculate ones, and we couldn't have made it alone. And all the divinity we've been denying within humanity shall tell. Simply keep up the loving as well. And all the humanity we've been betraying in divinity's name, it tells us we must keep our eyes fixed in this life and work towards easing the strain. To the beat, don't lose the plan and the rhythm the band's laying down. But the light of the Lord God above, love is shining, it's up on the moon you around. So skip a little bit, trip it to the beat, don't lose the plan and the rhythm the band's laying down. The light of the Lord God above, love is shining, it's up on the moon. Choose to adore.